This is A New Angle, a show about cool people doing awesome things in and around Montana. I'm your host, Justin Angle. This show is supported by First Security Bank, Blackfoot Communications, and the University of Montana College of Business. Hey folks, welcome back, and thanks for tuning in. Today, I am speaking with Austin Amestoy, Morning Edition host at Montana Public Radio, and host of The Big Why, an MTPR podcast that answers listener questions about anything Montana, big or small. In this special crossover episode, we'll learn more about The Big Why and bring you some of the show's magic in action. Austin, thanks for joining me today.
Pleasure to be here, Justin. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, a little field trip to Studio 49.
That's right. I can't believe I haven't been over here before.
I know. Well, welcome. And we will give you the treatment that everybody gets. Tell us, where did you grow up and what did your parents do?
Well, I had the good fortune of growing up in Laurel, Montana, which to listeners who don't know is south central Montana, 10, 15 minutes west of Billings.
Okay.
About, 8,000 people. Loved growing up in Laurel. And my dad works as an electrician. He co-owns an electrician business in Billings. And my mom is a kindergarten teacher.
So how did you get interested in journalism?
Oh, man. You know, it's like an interest that I kind of awakened to over time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that I've always been interested in. But it just took me a while to realize that I was interested in doing it and that I could do it as a job, you know? When I was young, I used to as young as like 6 or 7, would like schedule my viewings of the nightly news like every weekday night. I'd come home from school, do my homework, and then at 5, I was there for the local news and then the 5:30 national news.
And was NBC, you mentioned nightly news, so was NBC your outlet of
choice? It was. It still is.
Nice.
I have to say, I love the work that they do with their nightly newscast. But I just loved the idea of staying informed. Even at that age, I think I found it fascinating to hear what was going on in the world, And I actually always thought once I did get into journalism that I'd end up doing TV news. But I got pulled into radio late in college and it just got its hooks in me, so to speak.
But, yeah, talk about that some more. What hooked you and how did that unfold?
Well, after I graduated high school, I did a year of actually film school at Montana State University in Bozeman. I thought I was like, I love movies. I love watching movies. I thought maybe I'd love to make movies. Well, I figured out very quickly I like to talk about movies a lot more than I like to make them. So at that point, I pivoted to journalism because I sort of awakened to my childhood love of media and news. Yeah. So I went off to UM as a sophomore and did my last 3 years there. Along the way, I ended up working at the Montana Chiman, which is the student publication on campus at UM. And at a certain point, I'd always loved podcasting. I thought it was a fascinating format, but particularly, structured podcasting. I loved news podcasts, and I love what you could do with audio storytelling. And I was very surprised that the Chiman did not have an existing podcast.
Yeah.
So my senior year, I pitched the Chiman editor a weekly news podcast that we ended up calling the Chiman Cast.
The Chiman Cast. I love it.
Yeah. And so it was tied to our weekly cover story on the paper. Mm-hmm. And basically, I would bring in sometimes the sources who were consulted for that story, sometimes the reporter to break down their reporting, their story. Sometimes I'd go out in the field and gather sound related to that topic on the cover that week. And every week, we'd cut together an episode that's sort of news magazine style podcasting.
Yeah.
And I loved it. And it was, I think, really successful and a great exercise in learning for me. And right after graduation, my plan to kind of go back and do TV news kind of pivoted. And I ended up getting an internship here at Montana Public Radio.
Nice. And describe your responsibilities at MTPR.
Okay. All right. Well, my most forward-facing role is host of Morning Edition.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm on from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m., at least on air, Monday through Friday. I spend an hour prepping for the show before that. Afterwards, I'm a reporter. I've been covering education. I've done a little bit of Superfund work in the past, some stuff that's brought me into public lands and national forests. I'm kind of a gopher sometimes, too, which is easier on the truncated afternoon schedule sometimes.
Yeah.
You just hit the breaking news. And then I also serve as host of our bi-weekly podcast, The Big Why, which
right.
is something I picked up just a couple weeks after it started last, not last fall anymore, that's 2 falls ago now, when I came into the role of its Morning Edition host.
Yeah, so tell us about the big why. What is it? How did it come to be?
Sure. So the big why is really an effort by MTPR to engage with our audience in a new and different format, right? I think one of the awesome things about public radio is we already have a very strong relationship with our audience, right? In a way that you don't always when you turn on the TV and are watching your TV local news, right? Like our listeners sustain us, but we also want to sustain them and their interests. And I think the big why ended up being a perfect marriage of that. Basically, the idea of the big why is our reporters get to answer our listeners' burning questions about elements of life in Montana, right? It could be really anything. We've done stories on Montana politics. We've done stories on UFO sightings in Montana. Wow. Yeah, right? We've done stories on, you know, Montana's many nuclear missile silos. But I think the great thing about the Big Y is kind of twofold. One is we get to respond directly to our listeners' questions. Mm-hmm. And we get to engage really directly with them. We often bring them on to the show so that we can hear their voice and listeners can hear themselves on air. So that part's great. But the other thing is the Big Y gives us a platform to talk about stories in Montana that aren't necessarily imminently newsworthy, but they're still interesting, right? More documentarian style, where there may not be something happening imminently in that field or that subject, but it's still something people find themselves scratching their heads about as they go about their, you know, day-to-day lives.
Sure, and it must be fun for you because you're so attached to the daily news cycle with Morning Edition. And here you get to sort of do some more investigative, it's not quite long form, but you can sort of take a deep dive on topics that are a little bit more timeless.
Yeah, we'll call it mid-form maybe, medium
form. I like it.
No, absolutely. I mean, so I regularly host the Big Y, so we'll have someone come on, one of our reporters come on and sort of break down the question that they answered, mm-hmm. but I also get to do some reporting every now and then as well. And it has been just a blast, some of the topics that I've been able to cover. It's one of my favorite things I do at MTPR. I mean, I'm going to say this, and you're going to say, that doesn't sound like a blast, but it was. I became a pseudo expert in Montana's stream access law.
Okay, for that one does episode. Sound like a ton of fun.
Yeah, right? It was very fascinating. And it's something I never would have learned about otherwise yep. had I not been in this position. Gosh, I learned about weird place names in Montana. Why we uh-huh. have so many Mount Baldies. There's like 49 of them, by the way.
49 Mount
Something
Baldies.
Like that. I mean, it's somewhere in that range. Don't quote me on that actual number. I've got to be accurate here. But one of my most recent ones last fall was just an incredible experience. I got to go and walk through the sort of deteriorating remains of the former Montana State Orphanage in Twin Bridges with someone who had grown up there.
Okay.
Which was incredible. I mean, that sense of place and history and engagement with people who live right here in Montana was like, you know, pretty breathtaking. And it was just so fun to be able to be in that place, take in those sights and sounds, and then pull them in through the microphone and hopefully push them out to listeners in a way that can make them feel like they were there too,
sure.
You know?
Well, enough talking about it. Let's actually try some Big Y here on a new angle. Let's go.
All right, Justin. Well, let's do it. If you would be so kind as to put on your Big Y hosting hat, I'll give you an idea of how our show works. Cool?
Cool.
In this special episode of The Big Y, we're doing things a little differently. Our listeners submit more questions than you'll hear answered on the show, and there are a couple reasons for that. For one, we just don't have time to answer absolutely everything, and also, some have answers that don't quite fill up the full 9 minutes for our episodes. But some of your questions are just so good, it would be a shame to let them pass us by. We've picked 3 questions to answer in a Big Y speed round, if you will. We'll talk meteorology, motoring, and metalworking today.
Sounds great. And it's amazing that all 3 topics begin with M.
Our listeners like to keep us on our toes, that's for sure. And let's start with that first question. It comes to us from a listener in southwest Montana. Matt Mason lives in Gardner, just north of Yellowstone National Park during the summer, and loves to skateboard. The nearest skate park is in Livingston, which Mason noticed is prone to a weather phenomenon that can make his hobby a bit of a challenge.
There's nothing more embarrassing than driving an hour to get to Livingston to skate, and it is so windy that I can't even ride my skateboard.
I can't even imagine riding a skateboard myself, let alone trying to do it in the wind that Livingston regularly gets.
Right? Me neither, Justin. Matt Mason wanted to know, why is Livingston so windy?
And maybe there's an underlying assumption to challenge here. Is it that Livingston is that windy or Montana in general?
I had the same thought, so I called up Tom Humphrey. He's the head meteorologist at the National Weather Service office in Billings. Humphrey says Livingston really is measurably windier than the rest of the state.
Okay, so then what's so special about Livingston when it comes to the wind?
Well, Humphrey says there are a few phenomena at play.
Okay, the basic one that produces the strongest winds at Livingston typically happen in the fall and winter time.
During that time, Humphrey says high-pressure systems over Yellowstone National Park south of Livingston and low-pressure systems moving down from Canada often create what's called a pressure gradient. Basically, when those two systems collide, air from that high-pressure system gets pushed into that low-pressure area.
So all that high pressure from Yellowstone funnels up through the Paradise Valley into Livingston?
And produces some gusty winds, Justin. In fact, the Livingston Enterprise reported a 92-mile-per-hour gust in late February this year. That was just 2 miles per hour short of the city's all-time record.
I can't even imagine 92 miles an hour.
Yeah, I feel like I'd have a hard time standing up in that.
Let alone skateboarding.
That's right. But there's also one more phenomenon at play. Gap winds. Justin, have you ever put your thumb over the top of a garden hose?
Yes, often. I seem to break a hose nozzle all the time, so I'm familiar with the finger over the tip of the hose workaround.
Right, a workaround as old as time. Well, let's hear from Humphrey again.
The smaller you make that opening, the faster the water is going to squirt out of there. And that's the same thing for Livingston.
Paradise Valley sits between two mountain ranges. So you can think of that narrow valley like a thumb closing off the winds rushing up from Yellowstone. As the winds move along that pressure gradient, the gap in the mountains forces them to accelerate.
Right. So we have an air pressure gradient plus gap winds, and we get Montana's windiest city.
That's the equation, Justin. Shall we move on to our next question?
Yeah, let's do it. Okay, who are we hearing from now?
Well, that would be West Glacier resident Brian Rowland. He grew up in Indiana and moved to Montana in the early 2000s to work for the Forest Service. Rowland told me one thing really stuck out to him when he got here. It's a puzzle he's never quite solved.
Why are there so many intersections in Montana without either a stop sign or a yield sign?
You know, that's something I've noticed too, but I guess I've never really paid attention before.
Yeah, Justin, the town I grew up in here had 4 or 5 stoplights at most, and plenty of the kinds of crossings Roland is talking about, uncontrolled intersections. I always assumed they were just used where traffic was minimal, and that was the end of it.
But that's not the end of it?
Well, it's part of it, but not the whole picture. To learn more about how traffic controllers choose how to mark intersections, I called up Gabe Priebe. He's a traffic and safety engineer at the Montana Department of Transportation.
It's kind of the intersection of, you know, the math and science and then the psychology and the human aspect.
Priebe told me most uncontrolled intersections in Montana are in residential or rural areas, which, of course, the state has plenty of. There's also no way of knowing if Montana has more or less of these kinds of crossings than other states. No one's really keeping track of that. What we can talk about, though, is how traffic controllers decide how to mark an intersection. As it happens, Justin, there's a 1,000-page federal manual dedicated to helping controllers do just that.
I am sure that is a page-turner. But what does that 1,000-page manual tell us about uncontrolled intersections?
Well, Priebe told me the biggest factors that call for an intersection to be unsignalized, using the manual's language, are traffic volume and visibility. If drivers can easily see approaching traffic at the intersection, and if that intersection generally has fewer than 1,000 crossings per day, an uncontrolled intersection is usually called for.
So that's the math and science that Priebe was talking about, but what about the psychology?
Right, Justin. Here's the interesting part. Priebe says traffic controllers have found that putting stop signs in places they aren't warranted, like low-speed neighborhoods, for example, can give drivers a false sense of security, almost like a subconscious permission slip to speed through an intersection. Uncontrolled intersections, though, make drivers more uncomfortable.
Some of that discomfort is actually a little bit helpful because it gets people to slow down.
Yeah, that's fascinating that they sort of use that discomfort. I mean, when I experience the discomfort, yeah, I slow down. I take it more carefully. I turn down the radio. That radio part drives my kids nuts.
And that's an uncontrolled intersection at work, I suppose, Justin.
That's right. We'll be back to this Big Y crossover episode after this short break. A New Angle is supported by First Security Bank, Blackfoot Communications, and UM's College of Business. Access to capital, broadband, and education are three ingredients any community needs for success.
Hey, this is Coulter Nuanez from ESPN Missoula, and you're listening to A New Angle.
Welcome back to A New Angle. I'm here with Austin Amestoy, learning more about his MTPR podcast, The Big Y.
Okay, last stop on our Big Y speed round, Helena. That's where listener Sarah Bond has lived for about four decades. She worked for the state government and spent a lot of time soaking in the Capitol building's ornate details.
Throughout that time, I've often asked many people, who in the heck is on top of that dome?
So is she talking about the statue on top of the Capitol building?
That's right. It's as old as the Capitol itself, dating back to the early 1900s. And at first glance, it feels really familiar. A woman wearing Romanesque robes, holding a torch high above her head and a wreath in her other hand, and a starred and striped shield resting against her body.
Yeah, that sounds a little like another statue out east that's quite a bit bigger.
That's right. And former Montana Historical Society curator Kirby Lambert says the organization shared the same opinion.
We classified the statue as a personification of liberty.
Lambert says the statue's history was totally unknown for more than 100 years. The documents that would have identified its creator were destroyed in a fire, so the best the Historical Society could do was guess. She looked like Liberty, so she became known as Liberty. And that name stuck for nearly a century. All of that changed, though, in 2006 when Lambert's phone rang.
Picked up the phone, just not having any idea what it might be, and this woman on the other end said, I'm calling to find out if my grandfather's statue is still on your state capitol.
Really? So a call came out of the blue completely?
That's right.
Okay, so who was on the other end?
That would be Alice Nagel of Hatfield, Pennsylvania. Nagel had recently discovered a trunk that had belonged to her late grandfather, Edward Van Landegam. He was a Belgian-born metal sculptor who worked in Pennsylvania after immigrating. When Nagel opened the trunk, she found several newspaper clippings with an image of one of her grandfather's statues. And that statue? It was the one on top of the Capitol. But the thing is,
all the article that I had on it was she was called Montana.
So Liberty is actually Montana.
Exactly. Nagel says she was immediately intrigued, and she wanted to set the record straight.
And that's when I started searching for somebody to correspond with, and I picked Kirby's name, and I picked the right one.
Lambert says the Historical Society quickly redesignated Liberty as Montana. And though she may resemble her sister in New York Harbor, Lambert says that choice is likely very intentional.
So I think it's kind of a combination of being proud to be Montanans, but also an attempt to say, hey, we belong, we're legitimate.
And that's the origin of the Capitol Dome statue. Three questions in, 10, 11 minutes, Justin. That's not too bad.
Not bad at all. That was awesome. Okay, so let's debrief a little bit on that experience. First off, how do you decide what a good question is? How did you select those three questions?
Oh, man. Well, the first mark of a bad Big Y question is, can it be answered with yes or no?
Yeah, that would make for a short episode.
Exactly. So when we pick our questions, we really look for questions that aren't simply answered by, one, a Google search or a yes or no.
Sure.
We like them to be topics that are relevant to people living all over Montana, or if not the whole state, regions of Montana, right? And I think, a unifying factor is sort of the head-scratching, quizzical things people ask themselves when they're driving to work.
Sure.
Or, yeah, as we heard in this example, walking up into the Capitol building or moving to Montana, right? We love questions that make us work a little bit.
Huh. I never thought of that. Like uncontrolled intersections. Go through them all the time, right? And
exactly.
I slow down and I do all the things that Philip Preeb was talking about.
Totally.
Yet I had never thought about, why are there so many here in Montana?
Right. Well, and then, with the Capitol Dome statue example, right? Like, for one, that statue looks tiny on top of the Capitol Dome, so a lot of people probably don't even really pay attention to it up there. But then, you know, for two, when I started digging into it, I discovered this crazy backstory about this statue and how we didn't even know who made it or what its name was for 100 years because the records were lost. And you uncover not only these interesting news stories, but these interesting stories about people and the people living in Montana, right?
Does that sometimes unfold, like the process of answering a question will help you decide this is a good question for the big why?
Yeah, that can happen sometimes. You know, we'll do a little bit of pre-reporting into questions, kind of like test the water to see if there's something there. But really, a lot of the time, it just happens organically. Once we've already got that interesting question, and the layers just start to open up, right?
Sure.
And, you know, the Twin Bridges Orphanage episode I mentioned was a great example of that, where as I started digging into it and I started making contacts, you know, next thing I know, I found this Facebook group full of people who attended the orphanage when they were growing up. And I put out a call there for people to chat with me about it. And one thing led to another. And that's how I met the woman who eventually went down from, you know, North Central Montana, came all the way down there with me to Twin Bridges. And, you know, those types of experiences are fairly common on the big Y because they just, once you start peeling back the layers, you know, the story just becomes so rich a lot of the time.
So I am interested in the bizarre and the wacky and the surprising.
Sure.
Tell us, give us a story about the wackiest or most surprising thing that you've experienced in this, in making this show.
Yeah. Okay. So I actually forgot about this episode, which is crazy because it was one of my most favorite experiences on the Big Y. We had a listener ask us a question about how Montana's borders came to be, which again is another
like
one of those things.
Borders.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Which is another one of those things where you're like, you know, you never think about how they chose to draw the line. Right. And so that in itself was interesting. But as I was researching this, you know, doing my Google searching, kind of like going through the archives, I stumbled across what is essentially a modern day border dispute between a county in Montana and a county in Idaho.
Interesting.
Over where the exact line demarcating both states is.
Okay.
Which was just fascinating. And as it happens, you know, I actually found a state representative who's very involved in that process, who very, very firmly believes, you know, he's found where the line is. He's got the records to prove it. And in the last legislative session, there was actually an appropriation in the budget to do a new federal border survey point. So we can basically hand the receipts to this county in Idaho and say, this is where the border is.
Is there some especially interesting piece of land that's on dispute here, like a summit of a mountain or a part of a river?
So normally the border, and this is happening between Mineral County in Montana, Justin, and Shoshone County in Idaho.
Okay.
And that part of the border had been running along a mountain drainage.
Okay.
But the problem is when they blasted I-90 through the drainage, the actual location of the drainage moved, and Idaho claimed it moved a few hundred feet east into Montana's territory. So more of that is in Shoshone County. But, you know, the problem is the border itself didn't move. The drainage moved, but the border was drawn, Montana claims, along the natural drainage. So it's just like, you know, you would think that something like borders would be fairly settled between the states at this point, but I discovered that that can still be in flux, you know?
It's still a thing and still requires a Herculean effort to resolve the dispute.
That's right.
So let's, in our remaining time, Austin, talk about how listeners can get their questions on the Big Y. What is the process? And then maybe give some coaching as to what makes for the sort of question that breaks through.
Right. So right now, I'll also plug, Justin, we are especially soliciting questions about the 2024 election season.
Okay.
So I will say that here. We're really interested in your questions about, you know, politics in Montana, how to vote, how the election process works. If you're hearing buzzwords or confusing bits of political jargon you don't understand but you think are important, we're really looking for those kind of questions right now. But we are still taking any and all Montana.
Are the candidates too old? Is that a good big Y question?
Well, you know, I will say that's actually something we didn't talk about. Questions that are a matter of opinion are not really something we can get to the bottom of as journalists.
Sure. Well done. I liked how you sidestepped that.
Well, you know, thank you. There's maybe some similarities between journalists and politicians answering a question, right,
there
Justin?
Go.
There you go. Anyway, the best way to submit a question to the Big Y is to head to bigy.org. And there's an option right there on the page to type in your question, type in some information about yourself, and we get it all sort of submitted into a big, long list of your questions. We peruse it every now and then. And really, I think the best kinds of questions, like we've been talking about, are those ones that have a really interesting Montana hook, right? If it's something that's like, you know, feels like, ah, only in Montana, or, you know, some sort of interesting relic of Montana's past, or something that you can't find an answer to with a simple Google search,
yep.
That's the best kind of question, because we, as reporters, have the power, knowledge, experience to go past that Google search stage and try and, you know, bring up that answer for our listener and for our audience.
So we're looking for no yes or no's.
No yes or no.
We're looking for avoiding opinion.
Avoiding opinion.
Although differences in opinion in an answer could be interesting.
That's true. If you have a question about, and that's where like the sort of political or, you know, political nuance is there, right? Like
sure.
We've had one really interesting question submitted to us recently that basically asks how voters can differentiate between candidates for Supreme Court because they're nonpartisan.
That's right. I struggle with that sometimes.
Yeah. And see, something like that is fascinating, even though, you know, ultimately making a decision, you know, is a matter of opinion. Talking about the distinguishing factors between candidates is not, right? And I think that's a really interesting question. I think you may hear more from us about that in the future.
That's a meta question too, because you said you don't want questions that you can answer with Google. Yet I often go to Google to answer these Supreme Court justice questions. I'm sort of caught in a big Y vortex here, Austin. I'm not sure how I'm going to get out.
And you know what, Justin? I think really the biggest takeaway for listeners is if you have a question, just please submit it to us, because we love to read them. And sometimes, you know, we just write people back directly if we can find an answer quick enough. So
I love it. One more time, remind listeners where they can find the Big Y and how they can submit a question.
You can submit a question online at bigy.org. Also, you can listen to the Big Y during All Things Considered on Montana Public Radio live every other Wednesday, 6:50 p.m. We also wear a rerun the Saturday of the week after, so there's kind of a bouncing Big Y happening every week.
Okay.
We are also found everywhere you get your podcasts. Just search The Big Y.
Awesome. Well, Austin, I love what y'all are up to. It is fun and informative, and thanks for coming over here and telling us about it and showing us how the magic is made.
Justin, thanks for asking your own questions of The Big Y.
Thanks for listening to A New Angle. We really appreciate it. And we're coming to you from Studio 49, a generous gift from UM alums Michelle and Warren Hansen. A New Angle is presented by First Security Bank, Blackfoot Communications, and the University of Montana College of Business, with additional support from Consolidated Electrical Distributors, Drum Coffee, and Montana Public Radio. Keely Larson is our producer. Maddie Jordan is our production assistant. VTO, Jeff Ament, and John Wicks made our music. And Jeff Meese is our master of all things sound. Thanks a lot, and see you next time.